mothers.
And others.
Popular music and parody.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music. A chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we'll talk to people from across the industry, artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz.
Hello.
And Shelley. Hi, that's me. And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Our guest today is Siobhan Hunt. Siobhan is a broadcaster, a podcaster, a writer, producer, MC, facilitator and more. I think that's all of them. No, there's probably more. You may hear her most regularly as the voice of Feed, Play, Love and the parent panel for the parent brand, or you may read her work on Daily Life or Kidspot, or you may have fell in love with her as a producer and audio maker for the ABC, where she's made award-winning docos for Backyard Briefing, RN and local radio. Not that you're not in love with her for other things. We're just generally in love, really. That's true. So we are really thrilled to have you, Siobhan. We're really thrilled to have you join us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here.
So, Chevy, do you mind starting off by telling us what you think your place is, or where would you place yourself in? We talk about the music industry, but really the creative industries and all of those ways to kind of engage. What's your label? Where do you live?
That's interesting. It took me a while to find what I would call myself, particularly because I'm in podcasting. And even though podcasting has been around for over a decade, it's still kind of new. So I say I'm a podcast presenter and producer, but I'm also a writer, and I sometimes go back into radio. But I suppose for this podcast, I am mostly talk in the creative world.
You're all talk, love. You're all talk.
I am all talk, as I'm sure you will discover.
But to be fair, that's a lot of, because I guess the thing about podcasting, and we kind of cheat a little bit because we also sneak into radio, and we, you know, a lot of this is kind of semi-scripted,
well, we're planned.
Yeah, we are. We're planned. We have a sheet. We're reading things. We know. But do you find, are you somebody that works, you know, partly scripted, partly interviewed, partly, you know, how do you organise? Like, is it all one hat, or are there different hats for different, even just for different shows? You know, you do a lot of Q&A stuff if people haven't heard you before, you know, and a lot of mediating between guests and audiences. How do you approach it?
Well, pre-COVID, I loved the mediation part of things, which would have a little bit of scripting, only so that, you know, when you have a panel of people, you want to include everyone, but you also need to, you still need to have like a narrative arc. Let's say you have an hour where you're presenting to people, you still need to tie things in and you need to finish it off. So I would have quite a loose script for that sort of stuff, and I loved doing that pre-COVID. You mentioned the parent panel. That was really loose and a lot of fun, but that also went to the side when COVID hit, because you couldn't have guests in the studio, and that was a real – you really needed people in the studio to do that podcast. It's interesting because I am – if you talk to anyone, I am extremely organized in nearly every facet of my life. As a parent, and probably even pre-parenthood, if I'm honest, the only way I feel in control is if I have several Excel spreadsheets with everything going on that I need. I know that this is my diary. You can't see if you listen to the podcast.
Oh, but listeners, we're seeing highlighted text. Yeah.
So it only gets highlighted if it's done, and if it's not done, it remains not like that. So I am I'm very much, if I don't have it written down, I worry that I will miss it. Mm. So when it comes to Feed, Play, Love, it's completely scripted because it's a daily podcast, and I have to I work 2 days, so I have to schedule out everything for the next couple of weeks, and I could be speaking to several different people in one day. So I have to script all of that because there's no way I'll remember everything. And then if I'm doing a more structured podcast, so with more than one voice, I'll also probably script that, because for me, the more pre-production you do, the more freedom you have to follow something if something comes up, but also the more, I guess it sounds counterintuitive, but the more creative you can be in how you put your story together. So you're doing all the research before and then you want to make sure you have all the questions. And having said that, I would always say, like, I will put 6 or 7 questions down, but if my interviewee is, you know, really interesting and it's not as, I'll just keep asking questions and I don't look at what I've written, if that makes sense. But totally. I always start with the preparation.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love it. Well, it's like, you know, the old jazz thing. You've got to know the scales to forget the scales.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. You've got a plan so that you can go off script.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And if you don't, you can end up interviewing people. Like I find I've had people come in and they've left the interview and they've said, this is a humble brag, but they'd said, oh, you know, that was really nice. You really thought about the questions. And I'm thinking, what do you mean I really thought about the questions? Of course I thought about the questions. Why would I have you in if I didn't think about what you've written or what you've done? And a lot of them will be like, well, when you're on that media junket being interviewed about your book or whatever, a lot of people just look at the headline and will just go from there and ask the very surface level questions. But that's so uninteresting to me, particularly having been doing Fee Play Love for 6 years and having done over 1,000 interviews. I don't want to ask the top level questions. I want to know what's interesting. Can I tell you, I have had quite a few parenting books and I know that stuff that's up the top. I want to get down into the really interesting stuff that I haven't heard. It's kind of interesting when people give you that feedback because you're like, why would you bother if you haven't done the research? Why would you bother doing the interview, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But but you've got to go the extra mile there too, hey? Like you've got to then push to make that happen because it's super easy just to skim the press release and go, yep, okay, off you go.
Yeah.
You know, No, it's great. It's why you're still doing it.
Well, I have to be honest. I don't always read the book from front to back. I'll often read the introduction and maybe choose a chapter or whatever. But it's also doing research about the person who's written the book, right? Because you're not going to ever be able to interview someone and encapsulate a whole book. But more often than not, they're a really interesting person as well. So you kind of, you know, your research is a bit on the book and it's a bit on them and, yeah, all that stuff. I'm Siobhan Hunt and you're listening to Music, Mothers and Others.
Siobhan, you look like you're a very interesting person because behind you I can see 2 guitars that are hanging up on your wall. And I can't quite make out that poster, but it could be like a gig poster.
It is.
Tell us about that behind you.
Okay, so the poster behind me I can actually lay claim to because that's the Music Maker Foundation. And back when we fell pregnant on this trip, my husband and I went over to the States and I did a radio feature about the Music Maker Foundation, which was fascinating. It's a group in the US who are basically a not-for-profit who found artists, aging blues and roots artists who had kind of been the thing at the beginning of the industry and they were now living under the poverty line. So their remit was you had to be earning, I think it was $30,000 a year or under, and a lot of their artists were living in trailers. And basically I met them at the Blues and Roots Festival and their founder. It's such a great story, particularly now, 9 years on, when I'm like, you know, not going anywhere. And the founder of Music Maker Foundation said, when we met him at Blues and Roots, I was still a student at the time. He said, oh, maybe one day you'll come and visit us. And I'm like, sure. And then my husband and I, you know, fast forward several years, he said we were thinking about having a family. And I said, well, here's my checklist. You know, we need to have done all these things. And one of them was I wanted a serious trip overseas. And we decided we'd go to America and I pitched this idea to the ABC and they commissioned me to do it. And so we just got the most incredible access traveling down the East Coast of America and then visiting and going into the homes of all these incredible musos who were just so generous with their time. And I only recently listened to the feature we made, actually. My daughter accidentally found it on my husband's old iPod when we were in the car. And we were driving around and I was like, wow, this is so great. Did I make this? But that poster is when they came to, hilariously, after we'd had Darcy, she was about 2 years old, Music Maker Foundation came and played at Double Bay when we were living in Bellevue Hill, which is literally, I'm not kidding you, down the hill. This tiny little blues club, which I don't think is there anymore, they came to play there. So we went to watch them and then we invited them back to our one-bedroom apartment.
Oh, wow. There was
six old blues and roots artists to have a barbecue and then it rained and so they're all in our one-bedroom apartment and one of them got on the piano. It was just this beautiful kind of, it was such a great experience, which is why we have that poster on the wall. And the guitars are my husband's and I have nothing to do with them.
You don't need to top. Anybody can put up a guitar, right? That somebody else, that, yeah, yeah.
But that's not a proper everybody story. Can have a great poster behind them with an awesome story to match. I love that. That leads me into thinking about music and memories. So could you tell us a bit about your musical memories? I mean, is there any standout songs that shaped your childhood? Songs from when you were a kid? Could be maybe kids' songs or adult songs, and Liz and I often debate about what those categories mean, but maybe some of those tracks just influence who you are now as a person or even your professional practice.
Well, probably I wouldn't say it influences my professional practice, but it's actually quite embarrassing. But so when I was a kid, we spent 3 years in the UK and Bucks Fizz were really popular. And they had this song called The Land of Make Believe, which I loved so much. I tell a lie. I think the one way music has influenced my career is my mum, when I was a kid, used to sing us lullabies. And when I had my kids and mum was, I remember her distinctly holding Darcy when she was a baby and singing Morning Town Train to her, which is what she used to always sing to us. And then it just became this thing that I decided I was going to like rediscover all the lullabies mum sang to me. And so it was Morning Town Train, Christopher Robin, and then I mixed a few of my own ideas in and I started singing them to my kids. And then Dr. Anita Collins, you may have heard of her. She's an incredible academic. And we got talking about the influence of singing on children and music and what was happening in their brains. And so I pitched a podcast to Kindling Kids Radio at the time. And we did a podcast called The Lullaby Effect, where Anita led the whole thing because it was all her research. But we plotted out, I think, five or six different episodes all about how singing impacts babies' brains and how it makes you feel as a mum, because I think it's kind of worn off a bit now because my daughter's nine and I only recently was able to stop singing them to her. But the first time it happened, when I saw mum singing to my daughter, it was just this indescribable feeling of connection and life, that full circle of life, but also so much love and this really indefinable feeling of safety and comfort that you don't get as an adult. No one sings me lullabies anymore. But it was such an interesting thought, like why that connection to the song that I had and hopefully the feeling my kids will get, something about being in a dark room with my mother's soft voice singing. So I guess in a way that did influence me professionally much more than Bucks Fizz did.
Do you mind talking to us a bit about leaning into parenthood and leaning into a certain professional path? A big part of your professional work now, professional life, is tied to parenting, and you shared a lot of your personal life, although I've loved listening to your kids changing their minds about whether or not they want to be included and can you include them and all of that kind of stuff, you know. So do you mind telling us a bit about that kind of choice to lean in? And I mean, we just joke and say we just claim our kids on our tax now. Like, that's where we're doing it. Can you tell us a bit about the relationship you've got now and how that works?
Well, ironically, as a parenting podcaster, both of my children refuse to be involved in anything related to media. So when I first started doing the podcast, a friend of mine, Jacinta Tynan, and I met up with her and she said, "So what's your Instagram handle?" And I went, "I don't have one." And she was horrified and said, "You have to start an Instagram account." But at the same time, I was doing interviews with the eSafety Commissioner about sharenting. And, of course, before I had the job, I posted all the photos of videos of my daughter doing a poo on, you know, all that stuff. But then Darcy at the time, my eldest, was probably about 4 or 5 when I did this interview and when I was trying to get some kind of online presence, online public profile for sort of to help with the podcast. And in this interview, because I've done so many interviews and occasionally something will land and stick with me about parenting. And she said to me, the best way to teach children about their online profile and privacy and ownership of their photos is to give them that ownership. So no matter what age they are, you should ask them permission before you post something. And so I went, that sounds great and it's so easy to do, so that's what I'm going to do. And so I started asking Darcy for permission, and she started saying no, and she's never stopped. So this is appalling, but I've actually begged her sometimes and tried to bribe her, knowing that it was the wrong thing to do, but going, I'm meant to be a parenting podcaster. Can I please post a photo of you? So it's quite interesting actually, because she is so conscious of her image. She doesn't want the school to use any photos.
Yeah.
She gets, she doesn't want me to use her voice. It's kind of really interesting to see her relationship with all of that. And as much as I complain about it, because my feed is just full of photos of me and the dog now, I feel good about the fact that she has that ownership, and she will probably, all of our kids at some point are going to come to a reckoning with online media. I don't think she'll be off it forever, but they're all going to come to it from different perspectives. So I'm kind of happy that she's going to come to it from the perspective of understanding why it's important that she owns that image in a way, you know.
We're listening to music, mothers, and others.
How does it make you, though, because you kind of went from being, for want of a better description, a generalist to a specialist? Were you nervous, or did you just went, great, sweet, now I found my lane, you know?
My backstory is I was in advertising. I left advertising to go into radio, and that's how Liz and I met when I was teaching at Macquarie, teaching radio. And I effectively halved my income when I was about 28. And then it never got back to what it was. But I'd made so many sacrifices, you know. It felt like I'd made so many sacrifices. And at that point, the only way to get continuous work in radio was just to say yes to everything. Mm. And I had just spent 3 months hardly seeing my daughter, being stressed out all the time. And I just thought, what have I done? Like, where do I go now? And the truth is, that's when I was so tired. I left and I had Arlo, my son, and then he was about 3 months old, and I thought, oh no, I'm going to have to start pitching myself back to the ABC to get work for the summer break, which meant doing breakfast radio, which also would have meant I'd have to stop breastfeeding. There was no way he was going to be sleeping through the night. He would have been about 6 months at that point. And I was just so tired and depressed about it all that I posted on Facebook. I don't know if you remember that, Liz, but I basically said, hey, I don't think radio is working out for me anymore and I'm too tired to think of what I should do. You're my friends. What do you think I should do?
Ask the village.
Yeah. Ask the village. And bless my Facebook friends' souls collectively, but I just had this incredible stream of comments that were all really beautiful saying, you know, you and Daniel have always pursued your dreams and really respect that, blah, blah, blah. No one gave me any practical ideas. I just all went, good on you for doing this anyway. But then a friend of mine at Radio National saw the post and she'd been offered the job that I was to end up having, but it was too much of a risk for her because this was a startup, there were no guarantees. And then she basically said, do you want to have this interview with this guy who's starting Kids Radio Station? I knew nothing about it. I had two meetings and one with him, one with the other manager, and then I got the job 2 weeks later. And Arlo was 4 months old. Mm-hmm. So it was incredible. That is a very long way of saying that it was the absolute best thing for me at that point in my life. Mm. Because it was also I was so tired of doing, I didn't want to have to stay on top of current affairs. Like I'd been up with a baby all night. I didn't want to wake up and read about death and destruction and know all the ins and outs of who was in power. I just wanted to work out how the hell to parent two children.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a really great story about how you found something that does fit your working lifestyle, that fits being a parent, that doesn't mean the compromises that you were talking about with, say, the option of breakfast radio. And Liz and I are really interested in thinking about changes that can be made to industry to make it more friendly for parents. And you know, you're quite rightly talking about radio and podcasting, but if you had your magic wand, what recommendations do you think you could make so that it would be more welcoming to, let's just say, new mothers?
Look, I think it has to be just a huge fundamental shift in the way mothers in particular, but parents, both sexes, are valued in terms of what they're doing outside of work. So I was thinking about this because being a podcast, it was much easier for my work to be flexible with me. I mean, I did start out doing live radio, but it was like an hour show in the middle of the day. And I was thinking, how would I apply my magic wand to something like breakfast radio or the drive show or anything like that? I'm aware of how challenging that is structurally. Like some things are just what they are. So the drive program is 3 hours in the afternoon. It just requires the amount of work. It needs someone who works 5 days and then other people can job share. So structurally, there are some things that I'm just like, I don't know. I really don't know how you can fix that. But when I look, if I step back and I look at the whole industry and I look at how parents are treated in the workplace, I just think that if you have children, I don't want to say you've got two jobs, but you've got two responsibilities, let's say. You have a responsibility to the work and the content you create, but you have a responsibility to growing, nurturing, and caring for human beings. So I wouldn't say it's a job, but it's a huge responsibility, and I don't think that's recognised. And if I could change anything, it would be to wave my wand to all those people who don't have children, who get pissed off when you leave for that sporting carnival or you're running late or you have to leave early. Just wave that wand and then they go, oh, this is part of life. Like life.
Yeah, who do they think is the rest of the audience, right?
Yeah.
We're growing the audience. We're growing the people that are going to buy your records, man.
Yeah, but even bigger than that, you can't have, like, life doesn't exist without children. We need children and we need parents to raise those children. And it's that whole idea that people talk about. It's a bit like the equality and the feminist movement. People talk like it's been realized, or people talk about flexibility in workplaces being, oh yeah, everyone understands that parents have these responsibilities. I don't think they do.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that too about the bigger village as well, because I mean there's two things there. I remember Daniel coming in and looking after, maybe it was Darcy, when you were teaching casual teaching straight, and he'd be there so that you could feed in between classes. But also, it shouldn't have to be biological parents. You know, at that time I wasn't a parent, but I was still very active in my goddaughter's life. I mean, but it's even harder to say, this isn't even my kid, but I still feel a responsibility to helping my best friend who is her mum, who needs the help, or who, you know what I mean, who I just want to be part of their life, you know, then that's not seen as equally as important. And it's tough because it should be, right?
Yeah. And there are people without children who want to be more involved in family life and probably aren't included because there is this idea that if you don't have kids, you don't want to be involved, or it's not your problem. It's my responsibility. It's not yours. And it's a very individualistic way of looking at the world, which I think is slowly, it's just not working. People are seeing it's not working, you know?
It's not working, is it? And with the coronavirus lockdown, with the restrictions, you know, parenting at home over Zoom meetings, like work, your work life and your home life are no longer these pretending to be separate entities. It's, you know, where I'm making this podcast radio show from my bedroom, actually. And I think Liz is at work. You know, we have to combine these things now. There needs to be that understanding from employers and from colleagues too.
There's just one thing that we always ask people to finish the sentence, and it's not just so that we can play some cool music, but it kind of is too. we always want to know what you and the kids are listening to, and it can be your kids, it can be your extended family. I know you're an awesome auntie as well too, but is there anything in particular that you're listening to with the kids? It doesn't all have to be Wiggles and Bluey either, but it can be if it needs to be.
No,
so can you finish that sentence, the kids and I are listening to?
We built this city by Starship.
Sure. Ooh,
is
nice.
There dance moves to that? Come on.
Well, the problem is
just pumping.
They found all my, like, I have CDs in the car, and I have for some reason the best of the 80s in the car, and so they now, every time, like, for my sins, I have to listen to We Built This City, Come on Irene, and their latest favorite is I Would Walk 500 Miles.
Yeah.
There's definitely actions to that.
Proclaimers.
Yeah. That's such a fun song to sing with children. It's so daggy, but I love it.
I think on that note, Chell, we're done.
Yeah, we're done.
Thanks, darling. Thank you.
Music, Mothers and Others is written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt and edited by Nina Longfellow. We're broadcast on Sydney's 2SER and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. We are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. Visit us on Facebook and Instagram to find out who our upcoming guests will be. See you next time.